Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
It is John Pollock and Waiting. We did not get new theme music, but if there's any wrestling podcast that has popularized Sum 41, I think you and I deserve a little bit of credit for the inspiration.
So am I still waiting for our own custom Sum 41 theme song? Yes.
Listen, they chose the track "You Wanted War." We'll bring it to them.
I guess I didn't. Wasn't there a recent rebrand? Like, didn't they get a new song recently, or am I mistaken?
No, I think you're right. I am not the aficionado when it comes to themes at the beginning of shows, but yeah, I feel like they had just like done the whole graphics overhaul like a year ago.
Right. Your thoughts? Any?
Well, is this going to stick around, or is this going to be like a? I'm so excited. That was there for what
week?
Right,
you're right. Yeah.
Like, is this going to stick around, or was this just like a one-off?
I guess I'm guessing people didn't like that so much, and thus
I kind of liked it, to be honest. I didn't mind. I'm so excited. I thought it was pretty funny, but the internet disagreed with me.
This one feels like it has a bit more lasting power than I'm so excited.
Well, I mean, aren't Sum 41 shutting things down?
I think I read that again.
Aren't they on their farewell tour?
You're asking the wrong person, buddy.
Okay.
The right person to ask is the people in the chat room that are screaming at us right now.
Whitby's own, Derek Whibley. Well, we are going to get into Dynamite momentarily, but coming up this...
Aren't they from Ajax?
I thought Derek Whibley was from Whitby, but I might be confusing his last name just with Whitby and just connecting the two.
This has been the worst Sum 41 podcast in... Sum 41 history.
I'd argue it might be the best one. Let's get this for sure. Is way right. Oh man, dude, Derek Whibley's from Scarborough.
Oh wow, okay, way off.
And his birthday is right around March 21st. Look at that. Okay, well, you know they're from Ontario, basically.
Close enough. If Niagara Falls is right next to the CN Tower, then yes, like he might as well be from Whitby.
I mean, most of these cities are all the same once you cross the border. So in that regard, we're usually right. Coming up this week, folks, you want more of this? We're going to give you over an hour of this on Thursday because we've got Talk dropping on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We're going to find out all about Way's sabbatical, what he was up to, what Lucas is up to on a day-to-day basis.
I don't think I've revealed the name yet. So, spoiler alert. But
I think I've spoiled it a few times on shows.
You were talking about like George Lucas. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, what has George Lucas been up to?
George Lucas. Yes. GLT. Yeah. We will be talking to Way about all of that on Talk. PostWrestlingCafe.com dropping on Thursday. Also, Collision Course special Friday edition with Kate and John Cena to cover tomorrow's show in Detroit. And then we have a Resurgence review coming up Saturday with Bruce and Karen Peterson. Saturday night, Way and I go live on the YouTube channel here after Backlash, featuring John Cena versus Randy Orton one more goddamn time.
You know, they've never said, to my knowledge, like, you correct me if I'm wrong, you've watched these shows closer, but I don't think they've said the last time. for that. Yeah.
I think that on the graphic, I think there's been some promotional material that says one last time or something like that. But
really? Okay.
Again, chat room, correct me if I'm wrong, but I had seen that going around. So, but you're right. On television itself, they have not hit that home in terms of it being the last time.
Okay, yes, you're right. I do see a promo that says one last time. I mean, I don't know if I even trust the graphic, though. Like,
They literally have done matches before that was called, like, for the last time ever.
Yeah.
So let's not get caught up in, like, in storyline, if Randy Orton wins this match, what, John Cena can't challenge again for this title? Like, they can't do a rematch under any circumstance? Well, what if they have a double count out?
I mean, if Cena beats Orton, Orton could still challenge for it anyway. Well, let's assume it's the last time.
Okay. All that coming up this weekend, you can go ahead and jump on to postwrestlingcafe.com. You get the XL edition of this show where you get a half hour of news at the top of all of our shows tonight, going through some notable birthdays on May the 7th. The Janelle Grant lawsuit, the amended complaint, has been approved to move forward and has already been filed. We talked about AEW Forbidden Door tickets at the O2 Arena getting off to a super hot start. Lineups for Battleground that NXT is presenting and New Japan's Dominion. And this book is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg, coming in November, a really interesting project that AEW is undertaking, and what kind of book this will end up being when it is released. A future book club nominee, according to Waiting.
Oh, I demand it. Yeah. So beyond, the extra content that you get on the XL edition, of course, it is ad-free, as with all the programming in the Post Wrestling Cafe. And also, it is time-stamped for people that want to just zip through and see what the table of contents is for each one of these podcasts.
Always time stamped for your convenience, everyone.
By John Pollock himself. No AI at work here. It's John doing all that work.
Yeah, well, Waze graphics helped me tremendously as I skim through the shows. So all of that can be found postwrestlingcafe.com. Tonight we're going to Detroit at the Masonic Temple Theater. First of two nights at this venue, where Russell takes notes, 2,822 tickets distributed. It was a pretty lively crowd. And we got You Wanted War by Sum 41 to start off this edition of Dynamite. And that takes us into, first of all, what did you think about just the look of this place? Like, this is kind of in line with some of the more intimate venues that AEW is booking. That one thing I like is the venues they book. Boston had this with the music hall, the music hall at Fenway. Ones that have like some character to them that you can watch and, okay, I could identify what this venue is because it doesn't look like just a carbon copy of every single arena. They're finding ones that have some uniqueness to them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think like these sort of concert halls typically feel different. You know, whereas like a hockey arena, basketball arena, they all ultimately kind of look similar. These, you can actually see the walls. They're often like just, you know, they look iconic and they look of a classic nature. And I felt you got that here. But like, I know when we look at the numbers, this feels like a far cry from maybe what like a WWE is doing. But on camera, this feels big. It feels like
this is much better than lively. The bigger arenas that were three quarters empty. I mean, at least if you're booking a small venue and fill the small venue, I think like it's like, yes, if we're comparing arena to arena, one feels like a more major league product. But this to me is not an inferior look in that sense when it's a hot crowd and it looks like this.
Yeah, my argument is that if you didn't know the numbers, I don't think it comes across as that big of a difference. You know, both shows on Monday and on Wednesday sound incredibly lively and incredibly full. So I think AEW is doing great with their arena selections.
Do you think that there was any debate about whether we booked the Masonic Temple Theater, or do you think that they could have gone to Harpo's?
That
Waiting's favorite wrestling venue he's ever gone to.
God, at least it's May and not like, you know, the heat
the
of August.
Dead of August.
Holy shit. I'm sorry. Like I was interested in seeing GCW that night. I wasn't that interested. I left partway through. It was unbearable in there. So I'm hoping they had air conditioning in this place.
Kicking it off is Hangman Page, who comes in, and this was a This was a true Hangman promo. He was unsure why even one fan would cheer him after all I've done. And the crowd is chanting for him. He says, thank you. It does make a difference. And the last 2 years have been a special hell. I wanted revenge and justice for my family, and I found it. I took another man's only hopes and dreams, and I nearly killed him. I thought I would feel joy after our final cage match, but instead I felt nothing. I considered returning to the cage to finish the job that night, but I couldn't do it, and I don't know why. So instead, I bottled it up inside of me, and it ended up tearing down everyone around me. I just want to say to the there are no stories in AEW folks, I mean, it's laughable at a certain point. We shouldn't have even have to make these address, but this has been pretty much the story of Hangman Page is I lost this title to CM Punk and my life spiraled. And then I had the most traumatic incident of my life where my child was threatened by Swerve and thus transferring everything from Punk onto Swerve as my hated enemy. And that has informed this character for the last 18 months as he is clawing his way back for this championship. I thought this promo was amazing. He continues on here that with all of this rage built up inside of me, I had to make a decision. And he looks into the camera to tell Swerve, I will never forgive you. And I will never forget, but I had to put you behind me. And that's what allowed me to join the Owen Hart Cup. And now, after beating Josh Alexander and beating Kyle Fletcher in front of my family last week, I have to face the best wrestler in the world, Will Ospreay. And that sets up Ospreay coming out. I thought Hangman was amazing in this segment.
He's usually great, but when he actually talks about the sort of greater Hangman Page arc is, I think, when we love him the best. People call, like, Ospreay in the next promo, I mean, they refer to Page as like AEW's main character, and I think it's for good reason. We have seen through him, not just through this like Swerve feud, but the entirety of AEW's history, we've seen his development from a guy who was really just kind of like the background member of the Elite to somebody who was able to break out of that. We saw his initial failure in losing to Chris Jericho and challenging for the AEW championship. And from that point on, having to break out of the shell of being out of the Elite's shadow. We've seen him win the title. We've seen him lose the title. Then we saw, of course, everything to do with Swerve Strickland and this development of this incredible dark side, which was so captivating to watch. But now we're seeing the repercussions of it. And he's, you know, like showing us his regrets and his continued sort of overarching self-hatred that I think he continues to wrestle with. You know, I don't know if there's an actual main character of AEW, but you could definitely argue that Hangman Page is the most interesting character throughout AEW's history. He has a lot more depth than I think what we've come to expect from pro wrestling characters, and it's all taken place within AEW's history.
Ospreay enters, and they have a long stare down. The crowd is chanting happy birthday at him, and he apologizes for interrupting Page's therapy session. Of all the companies we've been in, we've never spoken, so it's a pleasure to meet you, and I've watched your journey. He brings up Page leading the Dark Order, showing leadership, winning the AEW title, but it all changed after you lost the belt. And last week, we got to see something you haven't done in a long time. We got to see you smile after beating Kyle Fletcher. And this is a great thing for you, but I can't let you fulfill your dream because I'm not losing at Double or Nothing. Page has been tearing this place apart, and he brings up the attacks on Jeff Jarrett, Christopher Daniels, and my good friend Swerve. I've been the guy out there doing media, meet and greets, taking photos, and wrestling the best matches. You can't just come and take that spot back. This is not about your redemption. It's about my ascension. And before they... Pardon?
Yeah. Great line.
Great line between with Ospreay here setting the stakes. And before they can go any further, the Don Callis family interrupts, and Callis calls Ospreay stupid for the day he left them, and Ospreay is getting visibly upset at this. Callis calls him a violent and unstable sociopath, and Ospreay puts his arm up to hold Page back, and his arm is on Page for an uncomfortably long time as he is playing off the crowd and then trying to get to this challenge for a tag match, and he... is issuing a challenge for two members of the Don Callis family to face them next week. And Paige removes the arm. And yes, we do have the will they get along for next week and putting these two together. But overall, I thought like a really great segment for this many weeks out. And we don't know how the Death Riders will be figured into the show. But I feel this should be the main event of Double or Nothing.
It certainly feels like the main event. And somewhat unfortunate that when it comes to the Death Riders, like, and a Jon Moxley title run, yet again, it feels like it's being overshadowed by the undercard of an AEW. But I think it tells you the strength of, like, certainly what a Will Ospreay represents to the company right now. But in this case, I think what a Hangman Page represents, he feels like maybe the hottest he's felt in maybe the entire company's history, and there are portions where he's felt incredibly hot, but now as a babyface, he really does feel like there's a lot of momentum behind him, to the point where I think most are expecting him to beat the top guy to end the show at All In, beating Jon Moxley for the championship. So I think I expect Tony to just, you know, continue to put the championship match last at Double or Nothing, unless we get maybe some Anarchy in the Arena type of match. I could see that going last instead. But this, I feel very much like it's the people's main event.
We go to the back and, sorry, not the back. Stokely Hathaway and FTR appear at the broadcast desk and they ask Tony if him or Nigel has an issue with them. We apologize to you and you keep referring to you keep calling us negative things and referring to Stokely as a snake in the grass. And Stokely is running him down when Tony stands up to Stokely. And the crowd was really ready for Tony to pop Stokely here, but he did not. And then Cash takes over, tells him to calm down, cuts a promo on Daniel Garcia. And it will be either Dax or Cash taking on Garcia tomorrow night on Collision. And also a warning issued to Nigel McGuinness that they'll see him too on Collision.
Yeah. You know, every tag team has sort of like a maybe more of a dominant member and a lesser member. And I think in FTR, it's always somewhat been seen, at least to me, that Dax has sort of held that, you know, position if we are to pick a Sean and a Marty. But in this heel program, like, it's Cash that's really stepped up on the microphone. He is the one who feels like the leading voice. He sounded incredibly comfortable. He's the guy, I think, with even more sort of narrative reasoning for turning on Adam Copeland. So I've really been impressed with Cash throughout these weeks.
Then Timeless Toni Storm, Thunder Rosa, Penelope. First we go backstage. Harley Cameron is with Anna Jay, and Anna Jay thanks Harley for having her fat ass last week. And Harley says, I did have your fat ass with both hands. She then talks about their TNA, tenacity and aggression, which Anna Jay also notes they also have tits and ass. And I think you should have to recap some of these.
Yeah,
I'm going to do all the Toni Storm promos. Then you're going to have to take over these two if this becomes a regular.
I'm very
and
sorry.
They end this by Anna Jay stating that you're going to get choked out, and it ended with her being piggybacked out of the shot by Harley Cameron. This was really pushing the limits of how quirky Harley Cameron can be and still be considered entertaining.
I didn't have, like, I think Cameron has sort of made a name for herself, like, doing some of this stuff, but I think with Jay, it actually feels a lot less natural, and in my opinion,
no,
a lot more cringy, you know, to kind of like hear her somewhat sound desperate, you know, in telling everybody that, hey, I have a big ass. And like, I think, like, there might be, because a Toni Storm is able to play with the, like, you know, sexual references so well and so creatively, there might be a tendency for, like, every babyface to, like, want to enter into, like, similar territory, but not everybody could do it as well. And in this case, it felt very forced. And again, I didn't find it very clever at all. So,
like, why can't FTR do this promo?
I guess, you know what? That's a great idea. Yeah.
Y'all, we got tenacity and we've got aggression. Well, thank you for having my fat cash. Toni Storm, Thunder Rosa, Penelope Ford, and Anna Jay, our first of two eliminator bouts on the show. Big reaction for Toni Storm. And Toni Storm uses a fisherman suplex onto Anna Jay. It is broken by Penelope Ford kicking her between the legs. Thunder Rosa, with the three on the floor, climbs to the top, and this was a rough tornillo off the top. I was worried she was going to like lose her footing here. She did make it to hit the targets. And then we had this graphic appear in the top left portion of the screen, this red spider. John Cena on top of this. Go refer to the C-notes in his Dynamite report, linking this to potentially the toxic spider Tekla, who has left Stardom and could be popping up here.
Yeah, it seems to be maybe a lot of the online conclusion to this clue. Kind of cool.
Because I thought it was going to be Tara bringing back her tarantula.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Arachnaman.
Okay.
Brad Armstrong.
Well, we have candidates.
We have a whole pack.
I don't think it'll be Brad Armstrong.
No, it's cool. It's cool to see AEW play with these sort of Easter Eggy type of things that, you know, WWE has kind of been known for, if this is what it is leading to.
Maybe every week the spider is going to go lower and lower on the screen, and then it's going to get to the bottom and hatch an egg.
And she pops out?
Exactly.
Just like that. I love it. Yes.
Yeah. That's how I would do
it. You should be writing the promos for FTR, and you should be booking Tekla's debut.
Okay. Well, there we have it. Storm does a head scissors, and then she applies a head scissors to Ford. Then Thunder Rosa comes and applies a head scissors to Storm. So we have a double head scissors spot. And then Anna Jay comes and rolls everyone around for a Boston Crab onto the three of them as they're flipped over. And seemed like she was trying her hardest to hold on to this, and this lasted about like 4 seconds. Storm hits a double hip attack to Jay and Ford. She's working with Thunder Rosa, so that elicits a chance of thunder tits. Megan Bain shows up, and they note there's no disqualifications in a four-way, so she just saunters into the ring and starts attacking people. Like, this is a four-way spot that we don't typically see, where people just willy-nilly come into the ring and start attacking people. But that's what she did here, and the ref couldn't do anything about it. So Ford gets nailed with a clothesline and a powerbomb. Cameron shows up because she's got Anna's fat ass covered, and comes with a pipe, attacks Bane, takes her to the back, and Storm breaks up a Muda lock applied by Ford to apply her TCM chicken wing.
Well, how did she break it up is I think.
Oh, did she also kick her between the legs? So
yes,
we got a eye for an eye, I guess. and then submits her with the TCM chicken wing. 10:52.
Yeah. We did, yeah. I mean, I thought the match was great. It had strong, fast-paced action, and I think a strong bit of humor with the crotch bookending stomps. achieved a lot here. I thought, you know, you continued to build this, like, Thunder Tits association, which is incredibly over and has, like, it already feels like it's the most substantial thing Thunder Rosa has done, and whenever they get to that feud with the breakup of the team, it's going to be probably quite big for the both of them. Your Jay and Cameron Bane Ford story continues to build from here, a possible Tekla tease, and it also continues Tony Storm's streak of these very impressive eliminator defenses.
Yeah, I just thought this match was going to be utilized to just set up a challenger for Storm, but they're obviously doing this deal where she wins all
everybody.
The eliminator bouts, mm-hmm. and they're explaining she wants to stay busy before All In, and if she wants to keep busy, they do have to create a challenger for her.
Well, I think that's what they're building up to, right? You know, having her basically clear out the division until somebody is able to stop her.
I guess so. Just... Maybe they'll do her and Megan Bain again.
They could. I mean, they could do Thunder Rosa.
I guess.
But
yeah.
No. We got. Well, yeah. Like, what else we got though? So who do you think is winning the Owen? Hayter or Monet?
I think Hayter.
I think Hayter too. I think Monet is destined for maybe something else. But I mean, you can't argue Monet versus Storm is probably the biggest match they could make.
That would be the biggest match. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, including an in-depth look at WrestleMania 32 from 2016, a 2003 edition of SmackDown featuring the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, and a special patron's pick where you get to choose what John and Way review. MCU Later returns with a review of Thunderbolts. Pollock and Ting will sit down and talk. We've also got coverage of Wrestling Dontaku, Collision Course every Saturday night, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. $6 a month gets you in the door at postwrestlingcafe.com. The crew arrives in the crowd, and the Hurt Syndicate come out. Big babyface response to them. And so we had Bobby Lashley, MVP, and Benjamin Shelton.
Yes, the great collegiate athlete, Benjamin Shelton.
You know,
who probably gained a few Twitter followers this week.
Probably, as did MVP. So the deal here is that, what was the show he was? Was it TMZ that it was one outlet anyway that he referred to him as Benjamin Shelton? It might have been, he did so much media last week for his freestyle deal. And then, like, clips popped up. He did it again in another, in a separate interview. And then when he was on Pat McAfee back in February, he also called him Benjamin Shelton.
I'm just shocked that he's spoken about Benjamin Shelton so many times.
It's because he's talking about, like, shooters he's wrestled with. And I don't think he has ever interacted with Benjamin Shelton or Shelton Benjamin in a match. But nonetheless,
you're kidding me. He's not even had a match.
I don't think those two ever interacted during his like 02-03 run.
I guess you're right. So what? Can he only name like three amateur wrestlers?
I mean, he can claim Kurt and he can claim Lesnar, and I guess he felt I need a third name. And
correction, we've had one interaction in 2003. Team Angle, Haas and Benjamin, and The Big Show took on Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle, and Mr. America.
Oh, well, then there you go. Don't never question Hulk Hogan's memory or his ability to tell the truth.
He knew from that point on. Yes.
All right. So Benjamin Shelton and Hulk Hogan have interacted, but dude, Hulk Hogan just caught heat from everybody this week, from Becky Lynch to Shelton to MVP. I mean, it was he's got a horrific reputation in this industry among his peers.
Well, listen, I'm at least happy now. We're at the point where I think we all, not just like you and I, obviously the people listening to this podcast, but it feels like wrestlers in the WWE now feel like they have the freedom to shit on Hulk Hogan, when it feels like for years, maybe under Vince, like that was sort of frowned upon or something. But now even the company, after like, you know, that Real American thing, like even the company feels like it's willing to shit on him, or at least, you know, employees of the company.
Yeah. And if you look at like what Benjamin brought up too, was like this now kind of famous meeting he had when he went to the WWE locker room. And the word that came out of that, it was not a case of I am sorry.
Like, do you need to recap this for people who might not have been online?
What, the racist video?
No, I mean the actual Shelton Benjamin tweet.
Well, I don't have the tweets in front of me if you want to bring them up. But this was it was several days removed from this clip that was going everywhere of him calling him Benjamin Shelton. And yeah, this is his message where he tweets to Hulk Hogan, "You lost me forever with your don't get caught, or as you would call it, apology speech. So rather than screw up my name and pretend we ever had any sort of camaraderie, which we never had, please do me a favor and keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth." And then he came up and slapped him right in the face. Boy, I mean, that was a tremendous use of a meme for Shelton.
Great use. Great tweet from Shelton, Benjamin Shelton. You should think about adopting that new name.
But the meeting he's referencing, I'm sure many people remember this, was when he spoke to the WWE locker room when the WWE was getting back into the Hulk Hogan business after he had been removed after the whole racist video came public in 2015, was the speech he gave to the locker room was not so much a one of, I am deeply apologetic for this. This was a point in my life that I'm forever embarrassed by and will work for your forgiveness. It was making sure you don't get caught when you you do, like, his blame was that someone recorded this and you have to be careful that you might be caught on tape doing stuff. Like, that was the egregious part of this, not what was on the actual tape. And you can see what someone like a Shelton Benjamin, and I'm sure many others, took from that. And you've had people that have, like, spoken up very, very steadfast in terms of their inability to, they're... has been a general belief of just no extension of an apology by Hulk Hogan, that many bring up. That is the big factor. It's not the fact that it is unforgivable. It is that he has made no attempt at real reparations.
He's kind of done the opposite. He's
doubled down in this period. And you even can look at some of his comments about Kamala Harris last year that came out. It was just stuff that at a certain point, there is this hero worship that will get you a lot of leeway, especially in an industry like this. And one that, you know what, it's kind of just been at this point, it is who this guy is. And this will be a large part of his reputation among a fan base. There will be those that grew up with him that will dismiss all of this stuff. But there is a very significant portion of fans and colleagues of his that this stuff is going to be a very sizable portion of how he is remembered.
When the obituary is written, this will be a significant part of his obituary.
Yeah. Of a guy that used to be incredibly savvy and an alarming rate of how image conscious he was to, really have his image self, stomp on his own legacy in many ways and go about it in such a way as he has over this last decade that has not endeared him to many people. The Hurt Syndicate is out for their segment and they ask, who are the best teams to challenge us? And they're answered by Top Flight, who come out. And Darius tries to get Detroit going here by basically they state, we know we will be huge underdogs here, but Detroit, do you want to see a miracle? And I guess the answer was no, because MJF jumps both men. I mean, poor Dante and Darius, they were just collateral damage in this segment. Dante gets busted open, hit with a brutal apron bomb. MJF walks up to Bobby Lashley and says, I hurt people. And Lashley, whose microphone was almost missed this line completely, will give MJF an answer next week at Beach Break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe first to comment on is Top Flight, where they came out and cut this, who wants to see us, get beat up by the Hurt Business promo, essentially. They got no, there was no feeling of this crowd taking them seriously whatsoever. So for all the airtime that they might be getting on Collision with this crew thing, it's a feud that really is not advancing. Certainly not Top Flight. I wonder if it's even advancing crew all that much beyond just kind of letting people know that they are a team now. Listen, the show has people, you have your Hurt Syndicates and then you have people to essentially job for the person trying to get into the Hurt Syndicate, and that unfortunately is where Top Flight finds itself right now. To that end, I thought they were actually a good pick for this segment for MJF to just kind of clown, to prove that he could hurt people. I've really been enjoying the saga between MJF and the Hurt Syndicate. I think each week has felt pretty substantial. Each week has logically built to the next. This thumbs up, thumbs down gimmick is a very simple but effective way to, again, progress the story. And it's given a really great establishing sort of presence for the Hurt Syndicate, as well as this new role for MJF. So I think it's been a really well-paced program so far.
Nick Wayne comes out with the Patriarchy, and it was teed up that someone from Christian's past will be challenging Nick Wayne. And this was, they tried to tee this up as a surprise, but they had also promoted who was going to be on this show in advance. So it is Rhino, and dude, he comes out. He gets one of the loudest reactions on this whole show. He was super over here in Detroit. If there's a city you're going to do this, obviously it's Detroit. And if you want to see why they added this guy to the shows, he got onto a bunch of local media in the last 24 hours. I mean, that's why he got on these shows, and they felt like it was of value to book Rhino for the show. Even for as short as this was, you know, Rhino was, they kept chanting for him. They're chanting Gore. And like, people really got into like Nick Wayne as the heel here because they wanted to see Rhino win this goddamn TV title. Excalibur does mention Nick Wayne is leaving tomorrow for Japan. And there is a spot where Nick Wayne grabs him by the hair and he's got to like clean his hands off of like the motor oil that is in Rhino's hair that he is just disgusted by.
Because he's from the Motor City.
Well, that's, he is.
Where they all wash their hair with motor oil.
He is built Ford tough. Wayne survives a spinebuster and then just manages the kill switch, and Rhino loses in 3:22. This whole crowd chants bullshit, and Cage goes to place the belt around Nick Wayne's waist. He stops and just drops it on the mat and leaves. Not the most, I don't know, whose write-off for the next while was less dramatic? Was it Nick Wayne's or Liv Morgan's?
Less dramatic. Well, Liv is off to play in a movie, so maybe.
Well, the segment was going to be dramatic. You're going to do a movie, and the paperwork has been approved. Bye.
Somehow that felt like it had more fanfare than Nick Wayne leaving for the Best of the Super Juniors. I guess, like, ultimately, I do question why now is the time to push a Nick Wayne when we know he'll likely be away for a month. I don't really know how I feel about this Christian Nick Wayne interaction just yet. I feel like this faction has kind of outstayed its welcome. But I thought tonight it was really well used for the big Rhino hometown pop, which I think I was pretty happy to see.
You don't see Christian showing up at the Best of the Super Juniors final to help or cost Nick?
I don't see him making the flight. No, I do not.
Yeah, that is a long one for Christian. Dude, Rhino, even if you told me, like, it's Detroit, it's Rhino, I'm like, okay, he'll get a pop, but, I don't know how you could complain about this. It was short. It was maybe too short for this crowd. Like, they were so into Rhino. He was, they got a lot of value out of him on the show. And maybe they throw him a bone with something, because he's on tomorrow night's show, too. Maybe he's in some kind of tag or something.
It was a nice surprise.
Sammy Guevara is $100,000 richer after winning a four-way match on Collision. And then we had the best promo of the year. Roosh says, Kevin Knight, you cost me $100,000. So now you owe me that money. And you'll pay it in blood.
Awesome.
I thought this was my favorite Roosh promo ever, from the, just a total lack of logic to, I love that this man has deduced that not only did you cost me this, now I will extract it from you and I will do it with your plasma.
It was like only like 10 seconds, but it was the best 10 second promo that I think you could get, honestly. Yeah.
It was tremendous.
How much blood would that have to
be? A lot. You're like more than Ren Narita lost at the Dog Pound cage match on the weekend. Mm. That's a lot of blood. So, six-man tag followed this with the Young Bucks and Ricochet against Swerve, Speedball, and Mark Briscoe. I missed a segment with them earlier where they were backstage. The Young Bucks were with Okada. Okada just called Knight a bitch. And then Ricochet explains he's got Swerve's number. The Bucks can just follow his lead tonight. And they turn around, and inside the Young Bucks office, which looked like it was like a church confessional, the Death Riders are just sitting in the dark.
Yeah.
Which could play into next week's match with Samoa Joe. It does feel as though we're going towards this Anarchy in the Arena deal with the Bucks and Death Riders coming together at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Six-man tag. Ricochet doesn't want in at the beginning with Swerve, but the Bucks will not tag in either. So Swerve attacks Ricochet, and we get some creative offense right away as Swerve lifts up Bailey onto his shoulders, firing him off into a Rana on Ricochet. The bald chants begin, and we get this sequence where the Bucks do their double stomp, sit out powerbomb combo to Speedball, Escalera by Nick to the floor on Swerve, and ends with a springboard 450 by Ricochet. And the crowd wants to go nuts, but they also know these are the heels, so they chant, "You still suck," at the three of them. And during the commercial break, at least I think this was during the commercial, Ricochet gets on his knees and the Bucks lean backwards so that Ricochet can pose with their hair over top of his bald head.
I love it.
It was a tremendous spot. And Bailey hits a Rana to Nick, sending him off the edge of the apron onto his brother Matt. Bailey attempts this missile dropkick, and he doesn't get all of it, and he lands badly, like on Matt's arm, that they do bring up in commentary. Everyone hits their big moves, culminating with a destroyer by Nick, and Swerve pops up from the destroyer to hit a last-ditch house call as all six men go down. The crowd's going wild. Nick saves Matt after the froggy bow, and then we see Briscoe take out Nick with a rolling blockbuster to the floor. Bailey with a golden triangle to Swerve, or sorry, to I believe it was to Ricochet on the floor. So Swerve is left with Matt, and he just walks into the ring and into an inside cradle as Matt catches him at 14 minutes and 15 seconds. And Swerve is just pissed that he got caught. But another excellent match that looks to be like their big multi-man that's becoming a staple every week on Dynamite.
Yeah, I'm really loving this as like one of the calling cards of AEW Dynamite each week. You know, just like this sort of posse cut of like very talented guys coming in, delivering an incredible multi-person match. Like WWE is not delivering this type of action on a consistent basis, and certainly not to this level. Everybody had a chance to look here, to look good here. I thought the Bucks and Ricochet were amazing as a heel trios team, both in their offense as well as their great sort of personality-driven stuff. Great cowering for the baby faces. I think they fit together not only as like great high flyers, but just in like the chicken shit heels that they play. So I'm loving all the posing. I think Ricochet continues to just like respond to the ball chance in like really the best way. He just in these months has just felt like so much of a bigger star with such natural heel charisma too. So I thought the finish was also very clever in that it was such a simple move that contrasted just the elaborate nature of the entire rest of the match.
Very simple, but it worked. It wasn't all that different from like the ending to that Io Sky Roxanne Perez match we talked about on Monday. Right. Like just a simple wrestling move that caught him, and I think sometimes that can be used really well as like with a babyface just getting caught and just so frustrated coming out of it. So I think we see where this is going and building up to like whether it's Anarchy in the Arena or some other big stipulation, but these matches have been tremendous these last couple of weeks. This one was no exception. Renee tries to interview Ospreay, and MJF walks in, plugs his Dynamite diamond ring that some fool can buy on AEW Shop. He hopes that Ospreay wins the Owen, calls him slow, and says that once you win my AEW title, it will be an easy win for me. And Will asks him why you didn't enter the Owen. Was it out of fear? And reminds him about Wembley last year, dropping him on his head, and asks, has that power in your arms? And MJF, who had a pretty great line, said, you're the reason that they put instructions on shampoo bottles. He says, no one is on the level of the devil, and you'll learn that if we face again. Will says, you're wrong, because I'm on another level.
Interesting that they're teasing this right now. Obviously with what they're referencing, it could be a red herring to make us think that Ospreay could be winning the championship, leading to an MJF match after All In. But I think more likely this tells me Ospreay is likely to lose the Owen, and MJF might be his destination for All In, if not maybe even earlier than that. What do you think about that as a rematch?
Yeah, it's like a big enough match for Ospreay if he's not in the title match at All In, because his big show should be Forbidden Door in London. Like that should be like, whether that's a big, like whatever you would constitute as a dream match. Like that's what I would want to build Ospreay up for, something significant, really significant for the O2 Arena. MJF is like a perfectly viable option for All In if he comes out of it without, beating Hangman. So I like this, and as well, like I like the fact that they are doing some of these stories where these big characters, they're involved in more than one story that you can weave between these, as long as you keep them straight and you keep them focused on, that you don't just forget about this and this isn't referenced for 6 weeks. I think like you can play with these characters and it makes a whole lot of sense of where you can do different tag matches and have different motivations for people of like who they align with and who they don't, because they have these enemies, and they have shown an ability to be able to do this. Like Hangman has this ultra hatred for Swerve, and it informs everything else that he does, but it allows him to go into these other directions. But you always have that tie to that one character.
And, you know, in this case, MJF's aid program is trying to get into the Hurt Syndicate, but that doesn't stop him from wanting to ultimately get his Triple B back.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Renee had her sit-down interview with Jamie Hayter, and Jamie Hayter is not going to let Owen's legacy be represented by Mercedes Moné. She was insulted when Mercedes compared Jamie Hayter and stating, "She reminds me a lot of myself." She says, "I might not have her resume or her star power, but I have integrity and grit, and I will prove that Moné is not untouchable." Then Renee tries to get a real answer out of her by bringing up the back injury that she missed. And Hayter completely dodges this and says, no one wants to hear about this back injury and she will not talk about it. So then Mercedes jumps her from behind and gets chased away, and they end up in the arena on the stage. And after Mercedes ducks a Hayterade, runs to the back, Hayter's music plays, but Mercedes returns, attacking her from behind, applies the statement maker, and then poses next to the trophy. And how did you feel about this? As we have talked about Jamie Hayter, that there is a lack of character depth that has been the biggest obstacle that a segment like this is supposed to fill in some of those blanks. Did they achieve that?
Well, seems like they're trying to tell us that she's hiding a back injury. And like from the matches I've seen, I don't think we've seen evidence of that. So I guess she's been hiding it really well. But I do like that added element to the match. If Moné is able to exploit it, and, you know, it gives her like an extra vulnerability, which I think is nice. I thought the interview was pretty bad, John.
I thought this was the worst segment on the show, to be honest.
I didn't think the answers were that great to begin with. But I think my bigger issue is with Jamie Hayter's very inauthentic delivery. I think her tone is a little too performative right now. It feels like, you know,
there's no substance. There's nothing in this segment to get you to rally behind Jamie Hayter. There's nothing to cling to. It was like so cliche, and just like this segment was just like, it was totally designed for everything we have talked about. And it was just the most base level wrestling promo that just gave you nothing to attach yourself to a Jamie Hayter and like want to root for her. Like, we are talking about a match that should be somewhere in the level of what we have with Ospreay and Hangman Page. Forget the match expectation, the segment of like, you care about one of them winning or not. We could not be further from this with Jamie Hayter.
Well, I would say similarly for Moné as well. Like, I thought her sit down last week was just maybe too reliant on catchphrases and not enough on actual reasons for why somebody would want a main event All In beyond just like, I don't know, wanting to prove that I'm the CEO or like whatever Hayter said here.
But she at least does have stock with the audience that I think like there's less of that hang up with building up a big match for her. I look at Jamie Hayter like, she is almost just starting from such a, like, there's just so little there that they have been able to evolve with this personality.
I also thought the voice with which she delivered the promo felt very, maybe a little too loud, in that it felt appropriate for like an in-arena promo on the microphone in front of a crowd. But these sit-downs tend to demand more calm or normal delivery, like, you know, like you're having a conversation or like doing a podcast, and not necessarily like you're giving a speech. I thought she needed to dial it back a little bit. And, you know, listen, like, the look, I know, has kind of like been made fun of, and I don't know if we need to make that big of a deal of it, but I do think it should be talked about in that, like, I think the look has become a bit over the top, especially when you throw in the shades here, and it's taken away a bit of, I think, the babyface reliability and also a bit of the cool factor that I think she possessed when she was just like this like silent killer behind Britt Baker. You know, that was much of the reason that I think drew the audience to her. And in her return, which, you know, isn't all necessarily her fault, because I thought her return wasn't very well booked to begin with, but certainly now that we've seen her talk at a bit more substantial length, I don't think Hayter's been doing herself any favors.
Can you bring up the image one more time?
Sure.
If this show was going to air on CBS in 1983, would you tune in to watch it, given this set design, the love seat, the background? Like this?
You think that's what they were calling for? You think they picked the set to match Jamie Hayter's...
I think outfit? So. I think they were going to do a spinoff of Winning Time.
Yeah. Like, I just don't know what she's necessarily trying to convey. You know, like, is she trying to convey that she's a person out of time, or just somebody like with a certain unique fashion sense? And I do think like your fashion sense should match whatever your character should be trying to convey. And this doesn't necessarily convey like, I hit hard Jamie Hayter babyface to me.
Well, I won't claim to be the fashionista of the two of us, but
I would neither at this point.
I just thought this was overall, what I was disappointed about was that when I saw that they were doing this segment, it was like, this has the potential to be everything we have been talking about. And it seems like an active choice to try and make this more of a convey some realness, some trait about Jamie Hayter that will get you to root for her in this match. And I felt that this segment didn't achieve any of that. I thought it was an unfortunate just miss of a segment, and this match is coming up in 2 weeks. So
it's at the point now where like I think she's doing so poorly as a babyface that I could see them turning her heel, and maybe that's what all of this has been in service of. Maybe she is trying to get a bad reaction.
But that's
that.
What we say about every babyface that is just struggling is like, oh, well, they're trying to turn her heel. Well, no, you're just not enjoying this.
Well, listen, if she's about to face, if she does win the Owen, she's going to face Toni Storm. The crowd will likely, you know, cheers Toni Storm much over Jamie Hayter, and that would necessitate a heel turn for Hayter. And I think a heel turn. It might be the right time for that, for Jamie.
Then she can address all the haters that drove me.
That she could do.
Then maybe they're going to take this clip of you away.
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
He ran down my shades.
I'm not the first.
Well, right. Next was we go to Alicia Toot, who is with Willow Nightingale, who she notes, you haven't been around for a while. You've been in Japan. She still has issues with the Death Riders, and Chris Statlander walks into the scene because Willow will not talk to her off camera. So we're going to do this in a live studio or a live interview setting. And Willow says, "You know what? I wanted to win the Owen last year, but I didn't because of you." And Statlander is kind of left with, "Yeah, I was a pretty awful friend. I don't have any comeback for this." And then Willow decides, "You know what? Why don't we have a match tomorrow?" She says, "Sure." So we're getting this on Thursday.
Yeah. I mean, are we expecting this to be a blow off of some sort? Are they finally going to be best friends again? You know, what are you expecting out of this?
I mean, at some point, I guess they've got to become friends again.
Well, maybe as early as tomorrow.
Yes. Okada and Kevin Knight, Roosh. I would say he got like $10,000 worth here.
Blood. I guess so.
Well, we got no blood from Kevin Knight, so maybe he didn't withdraw anything here. Okay. Maybe this was just just an advance payment. And so he is attacked by Roosh. Speedball runs out to help him, and Knight valiantly rolls into the ring for his eliminator bout, and the music, the match begins. Okada's just playing around with him for a while.
Okada had the best face at
he
just sitting
couldn't
in the ring.
Care less about what was going on here. Okay. He was just like, okay, match, no match, whatever. It's only Detroit.
Interesting.
So Knight finally, they go to the break after he avoids a tombstone, and he continues to be running to the barricade. If you're watching the commercial break commentary, you got Taz once again upset about the delineation between heavyweights and junior heavyweights before Excalibur had to explain, well, we're talking about New Japan because Kevin Knight's about to go over there. It's like, okay. Knight finally fights back, hits his leaping Rana, and then after he is hit with a scoop slam, elbow off the top, the Rainmaker gets countered with an inside cradle, and he leapfrogs a Rainmaker, hits a kick, UFO splash, but lands on the knees. Knight comes back, hits his own drop kick, springboards, and is caught. Okada nails him with a drop kick in midair, Rainmaker, and Okada wins in 9 minutes and 35 seconds. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that they're building Okada up for this big dream match or with Omega, I could have made the argument that this would have been like the type of eliminator to just give the surprise win to a Kevin Knight. He goes away, comes back with this big title shot that he is owed. But I just don't think they're doing that with an Okada. But I don't think it would kill them once in a while to do one of these big upsets. But he lost, got beaten down with more Rainmakers, and then the crowd.
Has Okada lost a singles match yet?
Well, he lost in the Continental Classic, right? To right. Osprey in the final.
Right.
But he's generally been pretty well protected.
Okay. I think you'd have to be on an Osprey level, though, like to be given that, you know?
Yeah. And of course, he's only a junior heavyweight, but don't tell Taz. Yeah. So he continues with Rainmakers afterwards, and the crowd is chanting Kenny, which is good for long term of where you're going, but for short term, poor Speedball, he came out and the crowd was just, oh, okay, it's Speedball, whatever. So he came out to chase off Okada. So I imagine we're going to probably get an Okada Speedball match at one of these shows in the next one, maybe even Double or Nothing.
I'm hoping it's a pay-per-view because I think there's a clear difference between pay-per-view Okada and TV Okada. What you got tonight was definitely a TV Okada. I mean, I understand the story is like, here's Okada, like, you know, basically beating up an opponent that's already beaten up so he can take his time and be cocky about it. But man, this was like, it was definitely just slow-paced Okada style for all it was worth, which is especially apparent as a heel. It did leave room for Knight to contrast him a little bit with his high flying, but ultimately, I think all of these types of Okada matches, to me, are weathering away the aura that the guy has, because I'm just kind of continually leaving these Okada appearances, not really being impressed, not having him leave any sort of impression to me on a show that is filled with incredible action. So, you know, the Kenny Okada will still be a wildly successful and widely anticipated match because it's on pay-per-view, because of the nostalgia between the two. But overall, you know, like Okada just kind of feels like set dressing at the moment.
So you kind of had the look on your face that Okada did at the beginning.
Yeah, did.
Okay. The Don Callis family. So this is very confusing because earlier we had this challenge issued for a tag match to pick any two members. So then the Don Callis family, Don says, well, we're going to issue a challenge and it's to the Outrunners to find some partners to face them tomorrow. And we're going to kick your ass back to 1983. So we are going to get the Outrunners and two people against the Don Callis family tomorrow.
Yep. And we actually had Fletcher beat Okada. Thank you very much, Shelton Mysterio in the chat for correcting us.
Collision on TBS on Thursday night. We have Speedball against Dralistico, Anthony Bowens against Lee Johnson, Willow Nightingale against Chris Statlander, and Daniel Garcia against either Dax or Cash.
Mm-hmm.
Did this inspire you for a Thursday night rendition of?
I'm going to say no. I think it feels so appropriate for a collision, at least on paper. You know, it definitely feels like the B show, and it feels appropriate for a B show. You know, if you're planning,
the bigger stars are on the show. Then they're not here tomorrow night. I mean, that's kind of the message you get. You'll get some great wrestling on Thursday night. I just, I think like there could be such an opportunity to like Wednesday feeds Thursday, but you can see their focus is more so on Beach Break next week to do like even MJF getting his answer from Bobby Lashley. Like they're building that Ospreay and Hangman teaming. They're doing that for next week. Mm-hmm. Alicia interviews the Hurt Syndicate. They now have a lawyer, Harrison Landau, who advises. Alicia was hilarious here. She's like, why do we have to wait till next week? Are you going to accept MJF into the group or not? And Harrison Landau said, you know, he whispered about, you know, popping a number for next week's quarter. So we're going to wait till next week. But I did appreciate Alicia just being so direct. Like, why do we have to wait a week? Just tell us.
What a reporter should do. Yeah. Why not? You know, wrestling needs more lawyers. Sure.
They didn't hire Mark Sterling.
Oh, no.
Joe and Claudio is our last match of the night. There's a cheap shot by Claudio, and immediately Joe applies the coquina clutch. Crowd erupts, but Claudio makes it to the rope. They run through the commercial. Claudio is in control. There's a cobra clutch, and Taz gave us a breakdown that the larger the circumference of the neck, the easier it is to choke somebody out. So Joe could be susceptible to a choke.
Okay. I guess it also depends on the length of your arms too, doesn't it?
Well, he believed that just because you have a large neck and a big head, okay, it doesn't mean that you have better protection or better defense from a choke because of the girth.
Well, I would trust his opinion on that.
So then the crowd started chanting bald at Claudio, which is like barely a pro Samoa Joe chant in 2025, but I guess more than Claudio. Giant Swing gets stopped by an up kick, and just like that, he catches Claudio in the Coquina clutch, immediate submission. So they're really trying to make the Coquina, you know, the instant tap out rather than the long selling and giving up. So Claudio was, he was here to get Joe heated up for next week because the Death Riders appear, but then so does Powerhouse Hobbs, who's wielding a chair, nails Claudio multiple times. Moxley has to watch on, and Joe lifts and drops Claudio's ribs onto the unfolded chair with the idea that Claudio has been taken out. These poor Death Riders. I mean, when Moxley is a big match, these guys are the, you know, they're just sacrificed. So that's next week, Joe challenging Jon Moxley in the cage match, and that is how Dynamite ended.
I think they've done a decent job of putting the choke over in this build as like an ultimate finisher for Joe. But in this match, I have to say, like, I love both guys, but I thought the match was really missing a spark. You know, it was missing a certain intensity or even creativity on a show, again, where we've seen so much of it. Something about Joe versus Claudio just felt very pedestrian and really not at all special to me. So I don't know if that's just indicative of my overall interest in like the current feud at the moment, or just like Claudio does a great job, I guess, you know, like being Claudio, being the sort of like number two guy. But it's I don't exactly, depending on the pairing, but like I didn't really get that excited about the pairing here, and the result didn't necessarily make me regret that feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a blowaway match or anything like that. It was the right finish. And, you know, this feels like a big TV main event. I don't know if this would have had the I don't know how this would have been figured as, you know, a big pay-per-view match for the company. And obviously they're going with this for TV and probably figuring out pretty quickly after that, like how the Death Riders are figured into Double or Nothing. Because you've got two Dynamites to lead into Double or Nothing.
Joe, I think at this point, is a very good TV challenger, or at least like the current version of Joe without that much like real story or momentum put behind him. Yes, like he's getting these sort of chokeouts on the offs, but like that sort of momentum can't be compared to a Will Ospreay's or a Hangman Page's, where like week after week we're seeing incredible storyline development with both of them, or in the case of Ospreay, just like a new freshness, you know, attached to like his ascension. Joe, he's Joe, so he has name value. He can come in, cut a great promo, and get you excited enough. But he's not really like top shelf babyface that I would put on the level of some of these other guys. So I think the title program might be overshadowed by that. But for TV, maybe you would feel that that would be appropriate.
All right, that was the show, and that's going to wrap things up on the YouTube channel. So thank you to everybody for staying up with us. We're going to be hanging out on the Post Wrestling Cafe. I'm going to share some of my thoughts on the Billy Jack Haynes edition of Dark Side of the Ring, and then we will also get to your feedback.
Hey, I wanted to plug on the Post Wrestling Cafe, WH Park and Rich Fan have released their latest MCU later talking about Thunderbolts, which I actually had a chance to see on Tuesday. Loved it, and I really enjoyed listening to Rich and WH's conversation right afterwards. So a great edition of MCU later right now in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
All right, check that out. MC later. They're always doing a tremendous job over there on the cafe, which is where we are heading. So goodbye on the YouTube channel, but on the cafe, the party just keeps going.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.